eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
It's that time of the week. It's that time of the year. It is fishing time. This is the Bite Me Podcast. I'm John Lopez. We have Captain Scott Null on the other side of the table, and he ran into an old friend, of course, who hopped in his truck, and that is Caleb McCumber. So we got the cast here for you today on the Bite Me Podcast, and we've got the topics for you. And I say it's that time of the week. It's also that time of the year because it is May, recording this on Cinco de Mayo, and that means we're kicking off into a whole different season of sorts. So we're gonna get into that today on the podcast. Also, fishing in rainy conditions. I think we have someone who's an expert on that in recent history in the room, as well as we've all had to deal with some rainy conditions of late. Successful wading. Man, Caleb, I'm glad you're here because we're going to talk about successful wades. Scott and I do it, but I know you've been doing a lot of it as well. Fishing styles under certain birds, trolling lures near shore, on and on and on it goes. Of course, mostly because of our great listeners on here on the Bite Me Podcast, and all of whom I hope are members of the Bite Me group page on Facebook. If you're not, click, and you are there. Very easy to do. Just go to Facebook, find the Bite Me Fishing Podcast, join, and you'll be with about 6,000 friends that we are very, very proud to say have been really great with the topics and the questions for this podcast. But beyond that, great with each other. It's a great community. Real legitimate questions. We keep things just strictly fishing and fishing-related topics and boating, et cetera, et cetera. So really happy with that. And as I always like to do that. Subscribe to the podcast pretty much wherever you can get a podcast. And let's get into it, man. I don't like to burn time just with the self-gratification, so to speak. So let's get right into the topics. Glad you're here, Caleb. I want to start with you on the first topic. I normally start with Captain Scott, but fishing in rainy conditions. You done any of that lately?
Have I?
I just sat at home and watched.
Oh, my gosh.
I watched the radar, and I just shook my head. I knew exactly where he was fishing.
Well, give us some background for those who didn't follow you on the group page.
So Daniel and I fished the second stop of the Professional Redfish League this weekend, which is a Friday and Saturday tournament. Monday, the forecast.
Where was it?
It was out of Harbor Walk in Galveston.
Okay.
Monday, the forecast was 20-mile-an-hour wind out of the north and sunny skies. Wednesday, the forecast was sunny skies. Thursday, the forecast was thunderstorms and rain and wind. And that was the correct one.
And that was the right one.
That was the correct one. We got to the launch Friday morning, and they ended up holding us back, I think, 45 minutes or an hour just because we couldn't go 5 minutes without seeing lightning cracking around.
Yeah, that's too much, man.
It rained all day long on Friday. Fortunately, the lightning settled down a little bit. A little bit of wind, not too bad, but it just dumped all day long. Saturday came around, and again, we had rain, except I think that time it rained 14 inches in places.
14 inches.
The wind gusted to 46.
You can have that stuff.
So we were running Daniel's boat, and it runs about 74.
Please don't tell me you were going anything faster than about 30.
Well, you see, it's complicated, John. So on day one, Daniel and I were the last boat in the draw. We were boat 30.
Okay.
And we got out and ran the boat like it can do, and I think we ended up being, you know, second or third boat once we got to the area that a lot of us
were
going.
The faster you go, the less chance their lightning can hit you.
So my
there you go.
My thought on this, and I said this to Daniel, I said, I hope that faster than lightning is a real thing, and I hope it applies to your boat. We took a couple of seagulls to the face.
Ouch.
The seagull actually hit the windshield right in front of my eyes, and my life flashed before them.
I would have left a mark, buddy.
Well, you know, seagulls do this thing where they'll come across the front of your boat, and then they'll do this little loop-de-doo and come back. Well, you know, they figure, yeah. Oh, I can't make it, even though they've already made it. Well, that works on a 55-mile-an-hour boat. On a 75-mile-an-hour boat, that just totally different results for the seagull. But then, so,
and the windshield? How's the windshield?
Oh, I'm happy with the results of the windshield.
Yeah, okay.
But Saturday morning, they reversed the draw, and we're boat one, right? And it's raining. It's kind of dark. You know, in this particular tournament, they say we're leaving at safe light, which means you're getting to your fishing spot at safe light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of dark, but I'm running the light bar, and I'm running, you know, like I said, we're boat one. We have one of the faster boats in the field. I was like, man, I told Daniel, so we're going to run about 55. It's raining. Mm-hmm. I did learn that not only is my beard glorious to look at, but it is phenomenal for keeping the rain from stinging every part of my face.
Yeah. You got a couple of inches here and there that are not going to be feeling like you're getting stuck with needles.
Right. So anyway, we take off. We're running 55, 56, 57, just kind of taking it easy. Chocolate Bayou's coming up, and this thing is – the Chocolate Bayou was big at that time. Mm-hmm. It was a southeast wind. It was blowing pretty hard. And I'm kind of just limping across Chocolate Bayou about 35 miles an hour. And
limping.
Yeah, just we're a little sore and beat up from the day before, but we're just kind of going across there. Well, I got about there when the ship channel comes out of Chocolate and takes a right and a left. That's about halfway across where we have to cross it there, mm-hmm. in the intercoastal. And to my left, I see this Haney Magnum just blast me. Gone. And I thought, those idiots. And then I thought, I can't let them get away with that.
So, I can be a bigger idiot than
that's
you.
Right. Yeah, I'll show you.
Watch this. And so we jumped it up and went a little bit harder. But yes, to answer your question, I was running every bit of 74, if not some more. And we did teach some lessons to the Haney. You know,
there you go.
We didn't catch fish worth a darn, but we won a boat race.
You were in it early.
Yeah. On day one, we had a little bit over 15 pounds, which set us at fifth for the day. And mm-hmm. our goal, honestly, between myself and most of the field, we would all be happy with 12 pounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, the weather was that bad on Friday.
Yeah.
And so day two rolls along. We're sitting at 15 pounds, which I think there were three or four teams at 15 pounds, one at 16 and one right at 17, I think. Mm-hmm. Which in a redfish tournament, if you're within 2 or 3 pounds of the leader,
you can get there.
You are all kinds of in it.
Yeah.
Day two, we went back to the same thing we did on day one, but the rain and the wind and everything had the water messed up. The thing that really killed me, and you know, I talk about this with you guys, I talk about it on my YouTube all the time, mm-hmm. is it's about putting pieces of the puzzle together and making decisions. So Friday, it was a full moon. In fact, it was the first super moon of the year. I think they had
that pink moon they call it.
Pink moon, which was just a joy to our ears to hear about.
Yeah, exactly.
But we always talk about the pieces of the puzzle. Well, you know, after a full moon, your bite is typically going to be right at daylight and then noon to 2 or 3 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we got held at the turn at the launch early, so the daylight bite wasn't going to be a thing.
Okay.
And so I knew that the bite was going to be noon or later. Well, on Friday, Daniel and I at noon, I don't even think we had a fish. We'd caught some smaller fish that we didn't want to have to weigh in, but we hadn't really caught anything good.
Yeah.
And then around 12:30, Daniel caught a fish that was around 7-something.
Okay.
And then about 1:30 or 2 o'clock, I caught a fish. I think he ended up going 8-3 for the big fish. And so day two, I said, you know, this is going to be the same scenario. We're going to have to, you know, just sit here and grind mm-hmm. it out. I needed the tide to be pulling out, which it wasn't in the morning. The tide was shifting around 11, but we're waiting on this bite. So we get there, and the water's nasty. It doesn't look like it did the day before.
Yeah.
But the first cast, we caught a 6-pound fish.
There you go.
Okay. And then I'm looking across the way from me, and there's another tournament angler over there. And he caught what I deemed to be a good fish and ended up being a 9-pound fish right across the way from us. And so that's where we made the decision to sit there and just grind that out. Well, by 2 o'clock, the water had just gotten worse and worse and worse with all the wind and the rain. And we were behind the eight ball, and it just didn't play out. I think we ended up bringing 9 pounds in or something. But the thing that really killed me was catching that fish right away and telling me, hey, there's fish here. We just need to let it happen.
So you almost got suckered in, so to speak, with the not really the weather changed everything, even though you were determined because you got suckered in.
Right. Yeah. No. And then, you know, you fish these things long enough, you know in the back of your mind what your other options were. Well, the weather had taken away so many of those options that, you know, we tried to pick the lesser of the evils, and, you know, it didn't work out, but that's just how it works when you're fishing 2-day tournaments, and it just, you know, you don't really get a chance to get lucky with it.
All right, Scott, what about us humans when we're fishing in rain? Some of this other, the question was a, but not none of us with the hair on fire fishing in a tournament, but like regular people, the question is about fishing in those conditions. And I do want to get back to you on that, because I know you had, look, we always give you a hard time, and I love that brand that you have now. I mean, there was another post on the group page today with a prop sticking halfway through a log, and like, oh, is that Caleb? I love that, because, I mean, you're extremely safe, but you are daring and when you're safe. So I want to get back to you on how you fished, how you got through all that. But for us regular folk, Scott, I'm not going to go out in what he went out in.
Nope.
Period.
I did 2 years ago.
Oh, I've done it. No.
And guess who I was with?
Well, that kind of narrows it down, because you're looking right at him.
That's pretty much the last time I've ever done that.
I should have qualified mine on purpose.
You know,
because I've done it by accident a few times. Well, yeah. I've misguided the, you know, get misguided.
If it's got electricity in it, I'm out.
Yeah.
I've seen boats that have been hit by electrical storms. It ain't fun, man. I mean, it fries a boat.
Yeah.
And I don't want any part of that.
Just the electronics alone.
Yeah, the electronics. I saw one. There was a boat way back when I was fishing around San Luis Pass, and big storm came in off the Gulf. One of those pop-up, middle of the summer, wasn't predicted, pops up, throwing out water spouts. You can see it coming. So we all bail, and we go to the old KOA camp that used to be there, San Luis Pass.
Mm-hmm.
We all nose our boats up in there. There's probably 10, 15 boats. I put my rods down.
Yeah, I do that.
You know, that's a smart thing. Back then, we had VHF radios with that big whip antenna.
Mm-hmm.
I laid my antenna down. This other boat pulls up, and he's late getting there. We're all up under the covers, just sitting there watching, you know, standing about 30 yards from the boats. And he pulls in the pouring down rain, ties off real quick, jumps up, and runs in there with us. And he's already, I mean, he's just soaked.
Socked, yeah.
And it wasn't, I mean, just seconds later, this boom and flash at the exact same time, you know.
Yeah, when, you know it's close.
You know when it damn near hit you. And then his boat was sizzling afterwards.
Man.
And he had left his rods and rod holders, and his antenna was up, and it got the antenna. His motor was completely seized up. We went after the storm passed. We went over and started messing with it. Motor was seized up, wouldn't even turn over. All of his reels that had been in rod holders that didn't get hit, all the reels, you couldn't crank them. It had melted the reels. The rods were gone.
Mm-hmm.
The actual fiber, these were all fiberglass rods back then. The fiberglass was gone. It melted.
Mm-hmm.
And you had handles with reels, and the reels were melted shut. And those were old Abu Garcias,
yeah,
you know, the old 5500s.
Yeah.
Old ambassadors, all metal.
Yeah.
And it had completely destroyed everything on his boat. All his electronics, nothing worked.
Yeah.
And that taught me a big lesson right there.
Yeah. I've been in some things by accident as well.
You know, after that tournament, Taylor and Robert and DJ and Justin and I were talking, and Taylor made the comment that tournament was the top two tournaments of all time for the most miserable conditions that we could be in. And I said, well, which one was the first one?
Yeah, I know which one it was.
It was the tournament that I talked to you into fishing with me.
That one that you were just mentioning right there.
When Daniel and I...
Was it 50-something mile an hour winds that day?
56.
56.
I think it was sustained at high 40s, gusting to 56.
Dude.
Scott and I... eye of the storm came over me and Scott that day. It was blowing... I mean, 50-something, and then it got dead calm, and me and Scott looked at each other, and did we just die?
That's not good.
Yeah, it was like, and then we found out there was tornadoes bumping around all around us. Yeah. We were in a ditch. We were in the Victoria Barge Canal, so we had these high sides, and just all of a sudden, I mean, I was fighting the trolling motor all day, of course, you know, with that much wind. And then just all of a sudden, the boat kind of lurched forward because there wasn't any wind anymore, and I had the trolling motor on high.
Oh, yeah.
That's when we kind of looked around.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel.
That's probably not good.
Probably not.
Daniel's really good at being optimistic about things, and he was talking about how miserable it was. And I said, you know, I've been out in worse, and I was with Scott, and he looked at me and said, you got Scott to fish in this stuff?
All right, so it sounds like we are discouraging people from fishing in that kind of weather, which we are. I've been in water spouts. I've been in some bad stuff, and I just don't want to go out there. I've done it mostly by accident, as I mentioned. But back to how we started, fishing in rain is not a bad thing. A lot of people, well, it's raining. Well, if you're not comfortable, don't go fishing. But actually fishing in rain, what are the different – like, I'm not talking about what we've just been talking about. Rainy conditions, is there, I mean, first of all, the pressure is different, so it might be beneficial. What else are you looking for when someone doesn't mind getting their wetsuit on, their raincoat on, and going out in that stuff?
Well, the number one thing that I pay attention to, and for this tournament, I was going to fish shallow marsh fish. I'd been on them guiding for 2 weeks. I knew exactly where they were. I knew what they weighed. I knew everything. And Friday morning, it thundered, right? It thundered pretty good. But it didn't thunder the rest of the day, so I didn't not go to them because I didn't want to be in the lightning over there. If it thunders in the morning, you need to understand right away that that will shut fish down in a snap. Mm-hmm. In fact, Scott and I had the
shallow,
same thing in that
shallow
tournament.
Fish will quit.
Lock them up. A lot of guys went to those fish, and they came back and said, we were running them over at the boat. Mike Ashworth, a friend of Scott and I, he fished a tournament on Saturday. He said he was in a kayak. He said he paddled up beside one and poked it with his paddle, and it just floated over sideways. It locks them up. But if it's just rain, I don't change my tactics a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be darker, so I'm going to throw darker lures. During that rainstorm, I threw a lot of wake baits. I threw a lot of spinner baits. I threw stuff that attracted some attention because there's the wind and the rain and everything's making a bunch of noise on the water. And, you know, I would assume that those vibrations are hitting that fish. So I'm trying to get something to get that fish's attention.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, it's just the darker water and adapting to the darker skies and that kind of whatnot.
I like it.
I do too.
During the summer.
Ridiculous. But
when it's been really, really hot and a rainstorm comes by without lightning and it comes by and it just dumps, I think it livens things up. It cools the water. You know, it's an instant relief of cool. It also oxygenates the water and I think it just wakes things up and it gets them going. I've had some of my best days throwing a topwater in a steady rain.
Yeah.
And I think it's the oxygen as much as anything else, but maybe the cooling as well.
And as he was saying, your lure choices and strategies, unless there's thunder, that doesn't change either, other than the lure may be a little darker, as he mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just rain, it's not windy, it's not thunder and lightning, I'm not going to change anything. I'm going to throw what I was throwing when it was, you know, before it started raining. But as far as that, the thunder and lightning, old Dean Slow Ride and I were out paddling on the flats down there in Redfish, and we were on fish all morning. They were tailing. The whole flat was just covered with tailing fish. It was one of those wonderful mornings, you know.
Yeah.
We weren't even having to, like, fight over the school. I could go to one school and he'd go to the other one. You know, it was just awesome. Well, this pop-up thunder shower came and was barreling right at us, so we paddled back to the truck, get in the truck, sit in the truck. It's going to pass, you know. But it turned out when it hit land, it came from offshore. When it hit land, it got real electrical, and it just popped and popped and popped all over that flat. And when it passed, I said, well, you ready to go back out? And he goes, ain't going to be no fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, typical Dean, ain't going to be no fish. I said, well, there was a bunch of them out there. I mean,
bound to be something.
Bound to be something. Yeah. Something's happening. We went out there and nothing. I mean, these fish left.
Yeah.
They weren't even on the floor. They weren't
even lockjaw.
You know that area is super clear. I mean, it's grass flats and crystal clear water. We paddled all over the whole entire flat and could not even locate the redfish. It wasn't like they just hunkered down. They left.
Right. Well, I mean, that's one of the things. As far as, like, the rain itself, the reason I like it is it's not high pressure. I mean, it's better pressure on the fish. That alone is a reason to go out if you can have the right gear.
No, and that's why in the wintertime when we're targeting the big trout on those dreary rainy days is, you know, when we really like to be out there. It's pressure dropping. It's pressure at least going down and staying low.
Yeah.
So it can definitely be a positive, no doubt.
The great thing these days is we have such an advantage over what we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, used to, I'd be out in West Bay and I'd see one coming, and you're looking at it going, well, which way is it going to go?
Yeah.
You know, those little ones, the little pop-ups.
I'm all right. I think I'll be all right.
We'll be eyeballing this. Or it would just flat run you off the water.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we got to get out of here on this one. And then it would disappear. It would go the other way. It wasn't really coming at you. It just looked like it. And then the opposite happens. You know, you can see one coming and you don't know if it's coming at you or not. Should I stay? Should I go?
Mm-hmm.
We got this little thing in our pocket right now that just dinged.
Yeah.
And, hell, it's got radar. It's got everything
on it.
It's
going.
I can look at it. And I've got one of my radars shows flashes for lightning.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I can sit there and watch the lightning like I was doing over the weekend on Friday and Saturday. I was watching all the lightning pop within the radar going,
You know, the
I'm glad I didn't go.
The funny part about that little phone is on day two of that tournament, we were real worried about the guys that going back to Sabine, because day one, the Sabine guys brought in all the heavy bags.
Oh, yeah.
I think I was fifth, and I'm pretty sure the top four were out of Sabine.
Mm-hmm.
And day two, whenever our fishing was slow, I pulled up, opened my phone, and I opened the weather station. And I looked at Sabine at the wind direction and whatnot, and I looked at Daniel and said, They're not catching us today.
Oh, trust me, I know that bay. When it starts blowing, especially out of the like northwest, you're done.
They had a north-northeast. Where they were fishing, I told Daniel, I said, they're not going to catch them there. And they didn't.
Yeah.
But there a couple of the guys, and hats off to them, on their way home, they stopped at some different places and put their stringers together. But, like Scott was saying, that phone's a powerful device of knowing what the weather's doing, where it is, and when it is.
I can't tell you how many times I've been on the water and either told someone or thought to myself, it's really not that bad. It's not that big. And then they just start building on each other. And it starts, once it hits the water, it starts growing backwards almost. And you're done. That's why you need to use these things.
Yeah, I watch them all the time coming in from offshore.
They look little bitty.
Yeah, they're little. But when you see one that's 2 or 3 or 4 miles offshore or 5 miles offshore, and you turn around, you know, you're up in the bay, you turn around and look out there and you go, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
But you look at your phone and you see it blossom.
Yeah.
And it starts growing. Move.
Yeah.
Because it ain't going to get smaller.
No.
All it's going to do is grow as it gets closer to land.
No, I agree 100%. All right. So another really good question. And I like – this is why I like doing this podcast, why I like our group page so much, because we have everybody from novices, I want to learn, to the guides. You were talking – you know, some of your buddies were talking about the podcast, I guess, this weekend at the tournament. So we have the whole gamut of level of fishermen.
Right.
This is a very good one that I think some experts or self-proclaimed experts might learn a thing or two as well from Scott, Captain Scott, and Captain Caleb. I'll read the whole question. Walk me through setting up a wade, starting from when you come off a plane all the way through your first cast. And I think this is a great question. I'll get into the other details so you can sort of let the wheel start turning a little bit. How far from your fishing spot do you kill power? Do you ease in with the trolling motor? What are you looking for as you slip over the side of the boat? How far from the boat before you start fishing? Great question, and I'm going to start with Scott on this one, just because I know you've been doing it a lot over your career, Scott, and Caleb's been doing it more recently, so we can kind of get a couple of different perspectives here. Like, you're teaching wading 101, and a lot of our listeners are going to appreciate that from the time you get off plane.
Depends on if I'm going to a spot or if I'm going to where I think I just saw some fish. You know, if I see a slick popping up,
right?
You know, or am I fishing, trying to work my way to the mouth of a cut, or, you know, how's this set up?
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I'm going to go down 100 yards, 75 to 100 yards down. I'm going to shut down pretty good ways out, generally 75 to 100 yards off the shore, depending on how deep it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just putter up till I feel like we can step out and be comfortable. You know, we're going to be about thigh deep. About the time the motor, maybe when the motor touches
starts
the bottom
grazing
a little
in.
Bit,
yeah.
Or it just kicks up a little dust in the back, then these days you just power pole. And then I'd put the anchor out on top of the power pole, mm-hmm. you know, for me.
Yeah.
I mean, some guys trust that the power pole all the way, but on a windy day, I'm not going to trust it completely. And just be as quiet as you can getting out of the boat. I mean, that's one of the things that I've seen over and over again. I've had it happen on my boat, people slamming, the lids to the deck, the lids to the ice chest, going to get one more last drink before you head out on a wade and let that ice chest lid pop.
Yeah.
Then just slip out quiet and start. I mean, it says in part of the question, how soon do you start casting? Right away.
As soon as you get your feet on the
second
ground.
My feet hit the bottom, I'm casting.
Mm-hmm.
And you're fan casting, walking back towards whatever made you stop, whether it was the spot or signs of fish, bait fish kicking or, slick or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The reason that you stopped there in that place to begin with. Then wade slow, just because you parked 100 yards down from that slick doesn't mean those fish haven't moved 50 yards in your direction.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to just hustle down there to that where that slick was popped up. Those fish move. They got fins.
Mm-hmm.
The worst I ever had was East Bay. Me and a buddy of mine had fished together all the time, mm-hmm. and we had our drill down.
Yeah.
I drive the boat. As I ease up there, he slipped the anchor out real quiet. We're on that North Shoreline East Bay, and it was the best setup I've ever driven into at daylight.
Yeah.
It smelled fishy. I mean, there were slicks. There were so many slicks, they weren't individual slicks.
Mm-hmm.
The whole shoreline was slicks. There was bait just milling on top, and then there was bait showering,
mm-hmm.
Here and there, and it's knee-deep water. And we're like, man, we are in.
This is it.
I'm looking at my buddy David, and I'm like, oh, dude, it doesn't get no better right here.
Yeah.
He's all excited. He gets up in the front. He's got the anchor. Well, he had talked me into bringing this other young officer who was a rookie.
I know how this is going to end.
he was a linebacker at U of H. So you think he's probably, he just graduated and got in the police academy and now he's a rookie for David. And he was the backup to Lamar Latham at the time.
Oh, wow.
So you think he's probably got decent feet, mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. a linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, both of his feet got tangled in the anchor rope. David and I had already got out of the boat and were already casting.
Yeah.
David had hooked up. I had had a blow up. And then we hear this boom, splash. His feet are still in the boat, tangled up in an anchor, and he's doing a push-up on the bottom. David and I just walked back to the boat. We helped him back, got him untied, got him back in the boat. We climbed back in the boat. I fired up and took off. And he's like, I thought we were fishing here.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, man. 280 pounds just did a belly flop.
Yeah, there you go.
Everything quit. I mean, the whole entire flat went dead out of the most perfect flat you could ever, I mean, what you dream of.
Mm-hmm.
And it killed it in a matter of seconds.
Beginning to end, my man.
Yeah. Well, let's just highlight the most important thing here is when you get out of the boat, do not look like an orca at SeaWorld.
Big time.
I mean, we all do it on accident sometimes.
Sometimes
I don't think he did that on purpose. Well, I'm pretty sure that was not how he intended to enter the water.
What I do sometimes, and I feel like an idiot, is I misjudge how deep it really is. I'll hit the rod on the bottom to make sure there's no stingrays. It's an old force of habit for me, and I'm very careful about that. And then I'll ease in, and then you let go of the boat, and it's actually deeper than you thought. And I'm like, oh, well, crap.
Or you could do like my old buddy Stevie, blind cut, and mm-hmm. where Mud Cut is, Mud Island in Rockport,
mm-hmm.
you got blind cut. We would pull up and nose the boat up on that, and it's like 8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
We'd park it there. The back of the boat is in about 8 feet. And he stepped clean off the back of the boat. I don't know why. He waded there with me 1,000 times. Me and two other guys had already gotten out of the boat, and we're starting to wade. And he fired up a cigarette
lost his train of thought.
I guess. And he just stepped right off the back of the boat like he was stepping into 6 inches of water.
Well, it wasn't.
The only thing that we could see was his hand holding his cigarette up. He didn't get his cigarette wet.
So what are your thoughts?
So pretty much along the lines of where Scott went with it, I'm going to make darn sure that I do not throw a wake across where I'm fishing at. So whichever direction I'm coming from, if I need to shut down
the other way,
if I either need to go way around it or shut down way early where I'm just putting to get upwind mm-hmm. of where I'm wanting to be, But it's a pretty simple scenario. I get upwind of it that way because I am going to be casting as soon as I get out of the boat. I'm gonna putt up to probably, like Scott said, where the motor's touching bottom.
Mm-hmm.
75 yards from where I'm going to fish is probably where I'll stop the boat and then get out and fish to it. There are certain places that we've found that the fish can be really spooky at, mm-hmm. and we've learned that over the years. And those places we may be much more methodical about it, but you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm 75, 50 yards away from where I'm wanting to fish at. Power pole down somewhere safe and just get out of the boat and start fishing towards them.
I'm not going to cover this now, but we have covered in the past, like what you're carrying, less is more, et cetera. Probably, you know, should mention here, it's perfect time for anybody who's really into the wade fishing, the Wade Right code that you can put in at coastalfishinggear.com, BiteMe20. And that's that $199 combo for $149. I've gone through everything. You can do it. You get an extra 20% off. A lot of people are jumping all over that. I had somebody tell me the other day, though, and I think I'm going to get two different opinions on this from you two guys. Because I was like, let me explain it. Does nothing but bay fishing. It ties in with what we're just talking about. Does nothing but bay fishing. Like a lot of us, has the trolling motor with anchor lock. And a power pole, or some people obviously use a talon. He says, all I do is bay fishing. I don't ever put an anchor in my boat. Thoughts?
I know too many people who have lost their boat.
Yeah.
And that's just, I mean, it's turned deadly on quite a few. Yeah. I mean, every year in Port O'Connor, we have somebody try to swim after their boat.
Yeah.
And end up drowning. It's usually during duck season. Mm-hmm. It's because it was blowing out of the south when they set up, and all of a sudden the front blew through and it's blowing out of the north. Boat floats off. They think they can go get it. They drown.
Yeah. I got his point because I told him, I said, no, I'm not. I just caution, you know, err to the side of caution. But he said, you know, I've always got power. I got an extra battery. They can always use one of those. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay, so your boat broke down out in the middle of the bay.
Right.
One fuse. It's 10 feet deep.
Yeah.
You know, well, now what are you going to do? You're going to just drift.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're going to drift the wrong way, I'd kind of like to have an anchor out there to be able to stop myself.
What if you're by, this is what I told him, what if you're by the intercoastal? And here comes a big old barge, and all of a sudden something goes up, or you kind of lose your whatever power or anything, you know, you got to have that anchor there. What are your thoughts on that?
On the way,
I got his point, by the way. I'm like that. I just, you know, today's technology, we talk about it all the time.
It's better. There's no doubt. Yeah. It's better, and I prefer to use the power pole.
Well, and the spot lock.
And yeah, that's kind of nice, but I've seen it too many times where it disappears on you. And belt and suspenders, man, it doesn't hurt to set that anchor out. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the downside to it?
Right.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
What are your thoughts?
I have an anchor on my boat. I've never taken it out of the hatch. I think I have an anchor on my boat.
That's how I got into this conversation with him. I said, I'm going to bring it up with the boys tomorrow. It was just yesterday because I have one at. Well, I got my new, you know, Freedom Boats. You know, you know the drill. I'm going to try to take Scott out here pretty soon from the boatyard. And I've had it in there since I got the boat. It's been going on a year now. I don't even remember what it looks like.
No, I've lost my boat.
But we haven't lost power. You know, that's the point.
Yeah. I've lost my boat before. I was on a mid-bay reef.
Imagine
that. Yeah, right? Yeah. I was on a mid-bay reef. It was blowing maybe 5 miles an hour. And a storm out of the northwest popped up in seconds, you know, and blew it off. I called Tommy Kuntz and I said, hey, I'll buy you a gallon of vodka if you come get me. And so that was, you know, all the drama to that. But I do see the value in having an anchor. If you do lose absolutely everything and you are getting sucked out in front of a barge, mm-hmm. and in my particular bay system, that's the only time that I would need it. In East Matagorda Bay, I can power pull down in the middle of the bay,
yeah.
and it's just shallow.
Mm-hmm.
In West Bay, I don't get out of the shallows. But I have thought about taking it out before because I'm real weird about weighting my boat, especially on my tournament side. You know, everything that doesn't have to be in there, I'll pull out. But but I do leave the anchor for what you guys are talking about, where if it is a scenario where I don't have a trolling motor, I don't have power pole, I don't have anything, I do have the ability to, you know, catch myself.
I thought it was an interesting question. I said, I'm going to ask it tomorrow because I bet you they're going to have slightly different opinion because I could see both sides. I was like, I just want to.
And when they first came out with the remote controls for the trolling motor and all that, one of our good buddies, Ron, I won't drop him completely in the grease, but he was telling me how cool it was. Because he'd get out on a wade and he'd drop that power pole and he'd leave his trolling motor down.
Oh, and he'd follow himself?
Yeah, then he'd wade way down and then he'd lift his power pole up and then he'd turn his trolling motor on and bring the boat to him and he'd drop it back down. And I said, that's going to bite you in the butt one of these days. No, no, it's great, man. It's fantastic. Well, he was close enough to raise the power pole, but he wasn't close enough for the trolling motor to hear his little clicker. And he was way down towards Baffin.
Yeah.
He was in the lower lagoon, not in Baffin, but across from the mouth of it. Mm-hmm. And last he saw his boat was floating towards Intercoastal out there heading towards Baffin. And he fishes weekdays. Yeah. There wasn't anybody around.
Nobody out
there.
He
finally flagged somebody down, but it had been a good while.
Man. Yeah, no, I've seen guys that do that. And that's exactly why I've kind of hesitated myself.
I just don't trust technology, personally.
I mean, I trust it a lot more.
I trust it some.
I've been really, really good with this boat, obviously, as I just mentioned. And everything's, it always works, you know. But there's going to come a day with all of us where something's not going to work. I'd rather have that anchor to toss out there. Okay, Scott, I know you and I have dug into the difference between pelicans and seagulls and terns. But I do want to get at least a quick hit from Caleb and your thoughts, if there's anything to add to this question from one of our listeners on the group page on Facebook. A little deeper dive, boys, if you can, into the types of birds on the bays and marsh and what to look for in their behavior. And this is what kind of piqued my interest because we've talked about, you know, fishing under them. What do you believe? What do you not believe? But what behaviors are you looking at when fishing? Well, actually, I'll finish the question. He says, I was fishing with a guy recently who say pelicans only do certain things when there's bait or fish around, and there's some types of gulls that are liars. We all talk about that with the terns and should be ignored altogether. I'm confused. So you just those three are the ones that are going to be the most common that you see, the pelicans, the seagulls, and the terns.
So the terns, a.k.a. liar birds, the little white guys, it's not factual that they should always be ignored. When you see them, most of the time, they're kind of flying in a line and diving down and picking up something, but they're moving. There are times when they're going to be sitting still. They're pecking at the same things over and over. Mm-hmm. That's whenever I don't ignore a tern.
Mm-hmm.
Seagulls, right now, we're in the time of year where they are working redfish. And you'll see it a lot in the flats right now. There's a bunch of small shrimp. There's shad. There's whenever a seagull works a redfish, they're typically hovering lower to the water.
Mm-hmm.
They make a lot more noise than when they're with trout, which I'll get to that in a second. But whenever they're on redfish, they're lower to the water. They're making a lot of racket most of the time. And the one that I always key on is the one that is maybe 3 or 4 feet off the water, and he'll dip down real quick and then come back up to right where he was just at.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times there's going to be 8, 10, 12 seagulls on a school of redfish, but there's going to be one or two that's telling you where the leader of that school is. And that's usually what I am targeting is the leader of that school. The fish is in the front. That's the easiest fish to catch most of the time. Pelicans?
No.
Scott loves them. I couldn't find a more useless bird on the planet for myself.
See, it depends. See, I knew. Go ahead.
It depends. I mean, if they're on the beachfront and they're around the jetties, absolutely going to watch them.
Okay.
In the bays, I really don't pay much attention to them.
Okay. And see, I don't fish the jetties hardly at all. So that explains that right there. I've gotten out on them over the years. You know, I saw a drain with a bunch of them in it and stuff. I've seen them in West Matagorda Bay where they're just bombing stuff by the thousands.
Yeah.
And
see, it also depends on how they're doing that. If they're bombing, like going way up and coming down hard and crashing, I don't pay any attention to them.
Okay.
If they're flying up about 2 feet and falling back into the water with their mouth open, go to them.
That's when you do it. See? Learn something today.
One thing I've learned, I do like your point on the lead seagull. One thing I've done, and I generally kind of roll my eyes at the pelicans, But when they will do this occasionally, I know you guys have seen it, you've been on the water more than me, but they do kind of backtrack a little bit. Generally, they're just kind of in one spot, and they're either diving or they're doing whatever. They're sitting there, got their noses down, whatever. But if they get up and then they go backward, if they do a loop-de-loop like a seagull would, and it's mm-hmm. a bigger loop-de-loop, I think that I would generally fish that. And the other thing, I've talked about this with Scott, turns near the shoreline to me are a whole different type of turn. I think they're a little more almost quote working on the shoreline. Would you disagree with that?
No, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Yeah, you know, they're because typically you're going to find a turn on a rip line.
Open, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to find him on a rip line where the currents are bringing some stuff together. So if they are on the edge, then there's a better chance that they are targeting some bait or they're following some fish or something mm-hmm. like that. And then as far as the seagull coming back around, yes, that seagull has a target. And it could be one redfish.
You don't see it a lot, but they will loop back around.
Yes, on my boat, whenever I'm guiding my sight casting stuff, I'm always picking out one seagull and trying to explain that one to my customer. As soon as you see him, not forget all the other ones. When you see that one, dip down real quick, cast right under his feet, mm-hmm. just right now, and because he's coming down where a redfish is pushing stuff up to him. And then the trout seagulls, they're quieter. They hang higher, you know, when they're working the schools of trout, they'll be 10, 12 feet up in the air and they're moving up and down from there. And so that's usually the way that I can tell the difference between whether they're on trout or redfish real quick.
And Scott, sitting seagulls, let's say you see four of them sitting on, let's say, about 100 yards off the shoreline. What is that telling you?
They were working at some point.
Yep.
You know, there's a school nearby. It just hasn't pushed the bait back up mm-hmm. and they're waiting. They know a lot more about it than we do. And they were feeding on something was pushing it up to the top. They were feeding on it, and then it dropped.
Yeah.
And those fish are generally going to, you know, recirculate around them, and they're going to get them pushed back up again, and those seagulls aren't going to leave there as long as they know that those fish are in the vicinity.
I can't tell you how many crab floats I've thought were sitting seagulls, because a lot of times they'll be together, and I'm like, ooh.
Pelicans is the same thing. Yeah. If I see a whole bunch of pelicans on the water, and they're swimming pretty close together, and one of them pops up and goes forward, you know, 3 or 4 feet, and just falls back in the water with his mouth open, and the others are swimming up quick to him,
mm-hmm.
that's a good sign. That's a sign, say it's at the jetties and stuff, but I caught the hell out of trout one day just inside the jetties
on pelicans?
The back side of the island. It was just pelicans doing that. They were working their way down. Honestly, I thought it was going to be jacks or bull reds.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled up there and it was solid trout, mid-20s, good solid trout.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I feel like we should backtrack a little bit because I'm sitting here thinking as we're talking. We were talking about all the stuff with the rain and the anchor, no anchor. We really haven't even talked about the horrible news this past week outside of, I guess it was the Colorado, wasn't it, Caleb, where the boat hit the 30-foot boat with five people ejected to.
30-foot?
No, it was a little
John boat.
The picture was a John boat. The report said 30-foot that I saw. I can double-check while we're talking about it. But regardless, there was a boat that hit a piling. Colorado before 5 a.m. is what I was reading in that. I mean, the obvious is it's incredibly sad. And, you know, we all can learn something. But what is that? What is that that we can learn? It sounds as if talking to Scott offline when we were texting, Scott, it seems like you've been told they weren't real familiar with that particular bay, correct?
Well, the reports are that they're all from Huntsville,
okay,
the Huntsville area. And I mean, it's all hearsay at this point. So I hate to really say too much about it, but that they weren't real familiar with being in that area. They come down for the weekend. I don't know that for a fact, honestly. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to speculate
too much. But it's like, what are the things that our listeners need to kind of have reinforced and talk about?
The difference between those guys doing that and Caleb running, Caleb taking off from the tournament, he knows his way around. He's on the water every day. He knows the dangers in the areas. Hitting a pylon in the dark is, probably not going to happen to him. I mean, we give him a hard time all the time, but he knows where he's going. He knows what he's doing.
Well,
whack a pylon in the dark, I mean, I guess they didn't have lights. The little boat that I saw on the picture.
I saw that one on the picture, and it was a John boat with a big dent in the front of it. And they're reading the story. And the story could have been wrong, too, either way. But it said it was a 30-foot boat, 5 fishermen, 2 ejected, 1 ultimately was found later.
Yeah, I'd heard it was 5. It was this little John boat, camoed up John boat.
Where?
And it hit, and then all 5 were ejected. And 3 of them were hurt pretty bad. 1 was dead when they found them right away.
Right.
They didn't find the other kid until the next day.
Where they were at, I highly doubt they were in a 30-foot boat.
That's what I was thinking.
If I had to guess, they were probably staying somewhere on the Colorado River. And then to get to where the accident was, you have to go through Bragg's Cut, which connects the lower Colorado and the diversion channel going into West Bay.
Mm-hmm.
In that cut, there's 3 or 4 sets of pilings. And then whenever you turn and go towards West Bay, down there towards the end, there's just one just in the middle of the diversion. And I'm not sure if they hit the ones in Bragg's Cut or the ones at the end of the diversion. If I had to guess, they hit the one at the diversion because whenever they finally found the young man, he was very close to where the wreck was at. If it would have happened in that cut, he would have been in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
But from what I saw, it was an aluminum boat. I don't think I saw a light bar on it. I was told it happened at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I'd heard that. Yeah.
So that's terrible weather. It's pitch black dark and somewhere that I wouldn't think that they were familiar with, because to get to the piling that I think they hit, you've already missed your turn to go the way that we go into West Bay at. Now, this could turn around on me and turn out that they really know the bay, because with the tide as high as it was, you could still make it through there. But if you were just following your typical navigation into there, they were in the wrong spot. But there's actually been quite a bit of tragedy this week. There was a captain that I knew really well, and I would imagine Scott did, that, he lost his life a couple of days before due to a boating accident, and I'm not even going to speculate, because we don't know if he had health issues before the wreck. Where that happened and how that happened doesn't make sense either. Long story short, if you're not good with the area, if you don't have lights, wait for safe light, wear your kill switch, wear your life jacket. Daniel and I, we wear our life jackets every time we're out.
Right.
Because you never know what can happen, and it happens in a split second.
Yeah. Hitting a log that's just floating 3 inches underwater. Logs don't all float.
Yeah.
They don't all float up there where you can see them. I've hit one of those. I hit one in Louisiana, took out my lower unit, never saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even after I hit it, I looked back, and I never saw it. It didn't even bob up, but I was in the middle of a shipping channel, so I know I didn't hit anything that was stuck to the bottom.
Right.
And so it had to be a floating log that was just submerged.
And we see those all the time. And, boy, we barely missed that one. Imagine how many you don't even see that you barely miss. And, of course, sometimes it can be worse than that.
Y'all give me a hard time about putting my boat up on land, which has happened once I want to talk about. But the most sudden stop I've ever came to was in the intercoastal. There was a floating dock line off of a barge. One of the big 3-4-inch ropes, and it hung my lower unit, and I came to a sudden stop.
Well, that's heavy, man.
That's kind of how they stop jets on a carrier,
right? Yeah, yeah.
same technique. You had your tail hook.
I was flying the USS Whoa.
Whoa. Quick kill switch is the main thing there.
And I mean, if you don't know the area, wait till it's good light to get out there and get moving around. And even if you do know the area, you're following your GPS, you got to have light. We always ran, I did duck hunts for years, and I had one designated guy who would sit in the front with a spotlight, and he's spotlighting everything. I had to fire one of them, though.
because all he did was spotlight gators. Huh. Every time we could pass a gator, he'd turn. I'm like, hey, I can't see in front of me, man. He's just looking at gators. But you can do the spotlight. Now you got the light bars. I hate them. Let's be on the side with that. I can't stand those light bars when they're coming at me in the dark down the canal. And you know, I've lost before daylight in the intercoastal, and those suckers come along there and just blind me.
I don't like the light bars either, but I see their purpose. One thing, I don't know if you guys do this or not. One thing I've done for years and years is I keep the, you know, the Q-beam rather than a light bar, just kind of keep it when I'm going out early. And I never flash it directly in front of my boat because it almost works like a mirror and it can kind of blind
me. Yeah, that's why I always put my guy on the bow.
You kind of go at a what is that, 60-degree angle maybe, not, you know, somewhere just kind of off the stern or the bow, but not directly in front of the boat because it kind of can blind you, too, when you're going at night.
So Plashlights gave me a new light bar at the Hitchcock
nice.
Show.
Nice.
And they've done something really cool. They've actually figured out how to channel that beam to where it stays off the deck of my boat. I mean, it lights it up a little bit, but nothing like before.
Yeah.
But it does. It shoots a real narrow beam out where I can see in front of me, but it's not lighting up that deck and blinding me. But then, like Scott was saying, and this the way I run my light bar, I'm going to flip it on and look for reflectors, look for something, I'm going to flip it off. If I'm just out completely by myself, I'll run with it on. Mm-hmm. But if I see another boat coming, I'll turn it off. Even if it's a barge coming, I'll turn it off.
Yeah.
Because you're messing with that barge driver, too. If you run towards enough barges with your light bar on, they're eventually going to hit you with theirs.
It's a little stronger.
It will knock you out of your boat.
Yeah, you need SPF 30 because right. They will light you up.
It's a little stronger.
Because most of the time, even at night, like running down the intercoastal, you can see the reflection of the water better with your light off.
That's what I'm saying. Go off at an angle. If it's really dark, I just kind of go off at a short angle.
Mm-hmm. But if you hit that light bar and there's within a quarter mile of you, there's a pylon with a piece of reflective tape on it. You're going to know it's there, and you can kind of cycle that thing on and off.
And you'll see that no matter. But I mainly do it for peace of mind because I'm worried about that stump. You know, kind of coming full circle on this topic. You know, you see the water fine. You see where you're going fine. There's nothing big in your way. But I use the thing and kind of go side by in case there's that whatever, some tree stump that's floating.
The simplest thing is just don't run at night.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not confident in the area, you don't know it that well, don't run in the dark.
Unless I'm in some tournament, and you know, guys know I don't do tournaments that often. About 20, 30 minutes before daylight is when I generally take off. You can see enough. It gets lighter every minute. There are a lot of guys that love to be out there, especially when it's crowded. You know, get out there early. These guys, that's what they were wanting to do. They were wanting to get to their spot. It ended tragically, but I get it. I think 20, 30 minutes before light, you can get to all the fish you want.
Slow down. Yeah. You know, slow down a bit. Of course, I'm saying that with Mr. 70 miles an hour over here. But slow down a little bit. If you're not familiar with the area.
Here's the other point. Last thing I'm going to say on this, because I want to get to this topic about trolling lures near shore, and I know that kind of piqued your interest, Scott. So I'm going to start with you. But don't just say you know what you're doing. You could just to impress your friends. Know in your heart that you know what you're doing. Because you guys know I always err to the side of caution. And I've been on the water for decades. But I'm not going to pretend. The other day, I asked you. I wanted to go down to, I wanted to go there. And I said, I'm thinking about running my boat over there. And you said, I wouldn't do it right now because there were some obstacles that I would have had to overcome.
Yeah,
I want to go there with Caleb.
Yeah.
To this.
You said, tell me how to get in there. And I said, go look at Google Earth and imagine me trying to tell you how to do that. even my guided trips, I'm picking up people at 7 o'clock most of the time. I want the sun up.
Yeah.
You know, and then even then I'm driving 35, 40 miles an hour everywhere. There's only one reason to be in a hurry to get somewhere. And, you know, that's tournament day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't found a reason to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and drive through the dark.
I don't want to get up. I generally have had a few beers the night before, so hey, I need all the sleep I can get to be on top of my game here. And just to be clear, before we get to the next topic, that place where Caleb and I are going fishing is called So
y'all can't see this, but Caleb jumped clean out of his seat, started waving his hands and back and forth. No.
Hold up.
I'm like,
USS Woe coming at you high.
I'm like, I haven't been there in forever, Caleb. He's like, don't go. No, but we'll go. I need to get Scott on the boat just because I want to get you out on that Warrior, and I need to get you on the boat because I want to go back to I haven't been there in a while.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, so this is a good topic. Scott, it seemed to pique your interest when I sent you the topic about trolling lures near shore. In fact, you sent me the question. Here's the question. Is it worth trolling lures this time of year? Let's say up to 3 miles out, plus or minus, any lure recommendation, what size reels are a must, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But actual trolling on the beachfront with lures.
Yeah, that's always a good idea. You know, once the water's above 70, 72 degrees, somewhere in there, you're just likely to catch anything. You can catch ling, you can catch kingfish, jacks. Further south, you might have a tarpon even roll up on it. It's a fun way to fish. And by near shore, I'm talking.
That's what I want to
get to. Within that, you know, half a mile off the beach is out to 3 or 4 miles. That green water section, and most of the coast, it's kind of a green water section. Mm-hmm. You're liable to catch any of those.
Sharks.
I do it in between, yeah. Like when we're running and we're looking for kingfish, or we're looking for a tarpon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a slow morning. We're not really seeing them. I'll drop back a couple lures and just, we're still looking for tarpon. And we're just kind of slowly trolling as well.
Yeah.
And, it kind of breaks up the monotony of looking for tarpon when they aren't up. And you'll pop a jackfish, you'll pop a king. I had a buddy come down from Dallas last year, and he had asked me about it. He brought his own boat, and he'd asked me what to do, you know, where to go, what to troll. And I said, you know, get you some deep diving crankbait mm-hmm. style. They've got the big lip on them. You can troll them a little bit quicker, getting a little bit of steel leader. Kingfish will cut you off if you don't. Jacks, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, but you got a good shot at catching a king. Mirror lure makes some great ones. They're 6-8 inches long. They're in the offshore section. You can find them.
Yeah.
Anyway, color doesn't matter that much to me on that. I want something a little flashy. The water's generally clear. Get that flash going. They'll come hit it from a distance. So you don't have to just run right straight over them. But what I told him was get that, put out a couple of lines, 4 if you can, drop a couple right behind the boat, mm-hmm. drop a couple further back. That way you can keep them from tangling each other up. If you don't have that option, you know, where you can spread them out a little bit, just do 2 and drop them back till they start running good. Yeah, everybody has a different idea about that, but I freeline them back and then put my thumb on the spool.
What does it look like running good?
It starts diving and it's not flipping around. If you do it too close to the boat and you sit, it looks good when you get the rod tip down and you're letting the line out and it looks like it's working good. Mm-hmm. Pull the rod tip up as if it's going to be in a rod holder. And when you do that, if you're too close to the boat, it'll start jumping. Mm-hmm. Or you're running too fast, one of the two. You can either slow the boat down or drop further back. I generally just drop a little bit further back. I told him go out about 25 to 30 feet deep. That 25 to 35 foot section mm-hmm. seems to be the best along my part of the coast.
For like the eclectic mix of whatever you're yeah, targeting.
Just for a mixed bag. Yeah. That's a really good section to be in. Stay really close to the 30-foot line. And he did that, and he called me up on his way back home. He said, man, that was the best I've ever had. He said, it was unbelievable. We had kingfish after kingfish.
That's awesome.
And it was about this time of year last year. Mm-hmm. So they're out there, and very mm-hmm. few people hit them because it's not offshore.
Well, crankbait, man.
It's not the beachfront. Yeah. Well, it's not the beachfront. It's not offshore.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of boats that clear the jetties every day, and they disappear over the horizon, and you just watch them take off. Then there's others that curl around a jetty and run the beachfront, and they're going down to trout fish most of the time. That 1 to 3 mile section doesn't have a whole lot of traffic in mm-hmm. it, and there's plenty of fish there. Mm-hmm. If you can find a weed line, you can find a color change. If you find a color change, zigzag in and out of it. You know, just follow it. If you get on a weed line, get on the clean side of it. There'll be a there's a clean side and a dirty side.
You'll know it when you see it.
Yeah, the weeds all pile up into a big long line. Mm-hmm. One side of the weeds will usually have a scattering of floating weed, and then the other side will be a straighter. You know, a solid break. Mm-hmm. I like to get on that clean side so you don't foul up your lures so much. Mm-hmm. The dirty side can be really good if you can keep trolling without hanging weed.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna have a ball of lettuce on there after about 100 yards on that side of it most of the time.
All right, Caleb, it's May, man. Before we get out of here, as I mentioned, early May right now, things are starting to change. Things are happening, buddy. Things are happening. What's happening right now? Now that you're in May, let's go back to the bays here, so to speak. What are you looking for? What's different?
Oh, we're looking at those little tiny, beautiful, shiny little bait fish. the hatches here has happened in a lot of areas of the coast. They're, you know, dime to quarter size. In other areas, they're still pretty small. But we're seeing the big tides, the big summer tides are starting to come in. And then when they recede back out, they're going to pull a lot of that bait fish out of the grass. Right now, I'm really targeting against grass lines, especially mm-hmm. for flounder and redfish, trout in the drains. I'm really loving an outgoing tide right now because everything's going to start sucking up to the shorelines. I'm telling my customers, show up with little mirror lures, show up with you know, the little small DOAs, a little Johns, anything small and kind of flashy. And then we're targeting outgoing tides. We're targeting near grass, near drains. And anywhere I can find those little balls of ripples that's showing me, hey, there's shad or glass mill or something there, I'm really targeting those areas.
The clear sparkle knock and tail right now is what I'm throwing. I know it has a name, and Mike is going to get mad at me, but same thing. You know, the knock and tail is easy on the shorelines because it does have that, the knock, and you virtually can throw it anywhere up there. Anything to add with what's happening in May?
Upper coast, I'm all about the spinnerbait for those little shad hatches. Mm-hmm. Done really well on it. On my part of the coast, the spinnerbait doesn't seem to work quite as well, that cleaner water. I'm getting ready to abandon the bays. My tarpon are coming, man. I'm getting some reports they're starting to move up the coast, and you guys can just have the bay where it's all crowded. I'm going to go out there where nobody's at.
All right. Captain Caleb TV. Let's talk about Captain. We might make an appearance on Captain Caleb TV here pretty soon.
We sure might do it. We mm-hmm. sure might do it. We've got a hot topic that we're about to cover. Mm-hmm. Captain Caleb TV is doing good. We're pushing in 10,000 subscribers, and I still can't believe it.
That's crazy.
It's growing. It's a lot of the Bite Me crowd is there. If you're part of the Bite Me crowd that isn't there, you're missing out. Come hang out. Hit the subscribe button. And you'll get to see John Lopez tell you some cool things here in a little bit.
Well, yeah, there's also a little thing going on that my wife started up, and Caleb's been kicking, and everybody's been pushing it. I have made it through 57 years of my life without getting inked.
Oh, gosh, I was going to bring that up first.
How did we not miss this?
I wasn't even going to bring it up, but I figured y'all would kick yourself if you didn't.
I had it on the top of my mind coming in.
And Caleb talked about it on the way in here, walking in.
So here we go. I guess you got to buy a Harley now, too. But so it's on the Bite Me Facebook page. Explain yourself, sir.
It started off with one of our listeners, and he found this cute little tattoo of a little trout fly which are minute little things, little trout fly.
I thought it was really in the dude's arm when I saw it.
Yeah, it looked realistic. Yeah. It did. But on second look, it was a tattoo of a fly that has hooked someone. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a story behind that one. Well, I've been hooked, I don't know how many times, by customers with various flies in various parts of my body. And our listener that put that up there said, what would it take to get you to do one of these? And I said, well, first off, it's going to have to be a tarpon fly. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's got to be a tarpon fly, right? But it's also going to have to raise some money for a good cause. And Heroes on the Water, that's my favorite charity. I've talked about it on here before. Take wounded vets out on kayaks.
Yeah.
And also law enforcement, if you know, they need a break. And we've got chapters all over the country. And so I couldn't think of a better organization. Mm-hmm. And then my wife popped up with, well,
we can do that.
We can do that. I just kind of, well, all right. I guess I done put my foot in my mouth on this one. So we're trying to raise money for Heroes on the Water. And my wife set the goal at
$5,000. Yeah, we can get to $5,000. We can get you to $5,000.
Everybody keeps saying we can get to $5,000, but it seems like it's kind of stalled out a little bit.
Really,
right,
it's
now
not going to stall out after today, that's for sure.
Well, I bumped it again the other day, and my own mother sent $100 in. But between the one on the Bite Me page, I think that one's at a couple of grand, and then my personal one is a little bit over $1,000. So we're getting there.
I'm pretty sure my mom will probably match it not to get it.
Well, just tell
too
her.
Too late
just tell
now.
Her, I got to tell off on Scott. My first tattoo went from my knee to my ankle, and I was waiting for Scott to, you know, reprimand me a little bit. And Scott said, "Man, that's pretty cool. I think I want one."
Oh, there we go. I did not say I want one. No. Yeah, you're wrong.
But yeah,
you're wrong on that.
If you're listening, you can join the Bite Me group and find it there, or you can go to Captain Caleb TV on Facebook, and we have two separate ones going right now, but they're both the same call. So if you look at one and it's not close to 5,000, well, there's two of them going, and we're covering ground.
And if we raise the 5,000, I'm going to get inked.
Yeah. You are going to get inked.
I got a funny feeling that's going to push it. And one of my good.
I got a funny feeling it's going to be on Captain Caleb TV.
I will be there. Yeah. I am going to be there with cameras.
One of my ultra conservative friends, Jason Bryant. He even put on there, it surprised the heck out of me. He doesn't hardly ever get on social media. He posted on that one. He said, I don't care if I have to bankrupt my savings and jeopardize my retirement. This is happening.
Yeah. This is going to happen.
So now would be a good time to give Mike Ashworth at Advent Studios a plug. But he's sponsoring the tattoo to help raise money for Heroes on the Water.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. He's so, offered to draw it up and stick me.
And believe me, I'm covered in them, and he ain't cheap. He's not here to practice.
That's one of the only reasons I agreed to it. He's really, really good, and I want it to look realistic.
Well, it will. It will. Everybody's going to think, oh, did I do that? No, it's a tattoo. And, by the way, scottnullphotography.com, if you want to get some Bite Me gear. Scott's wearing our gator right now around his neck because we're in this studio, and he had to work to come in. I know Captain Caleb has some Bite Me gear. You can go to scottnullphotography.com to get that, see some of his pictures. There's going to be more, I have a hunch, in the next few weeks and months right there. And one more thing, if you got $5, $10 while we're doing things for a good cause, Bite Me Fishing. Text the word, in one word, Bite Me Fishing to 41444. That's going to help the American Heart Association of the Gulf Coast. Our people, our group that needs some help right now. We were going to do the fishing tournament to raise money for the American Heart Association Gulf Coast. We still will, but it's going to be in September. But they need some money right now. Just whatever you got, $5, $10, $100. Match what you're going to give to Scott Knoll's tattoo fund if you can. Just text the word Bite Me Fishing to 41444. Great episode, fun episode. Got to get Captain Caleb back next week because there's a lot of topics that he needs to touch on that we didn't get to. So until then, hope you guys catch them all up. And don't forget, you can find Caleb and me at talk to you next week.